friends, and welcome to Tim Kirby Russia. I'm Tim Kirby, political analyst and radio talk show host, an American who's lived in Russia for about 15 years now, who's one of the few people who actually knows how the society works, how the civilization flows, and how to say those things in English. Today's episode, friends, is going to get spicy because our topic is a hot one, feminism in Russia and how it's different from the West. Our guest for the big interview today is Daria Platonova, who has a PhD from Moscow State University. She's a political observer and specialist in Neoplatonism, as well as a researcher in Orthodox feminism. But we'll get to that a little bit later. Okay, so before our big discussion about feminism in Russia, I'd like to jump back in time a little bit to medieval times. Not to talk about women's issues or anything like that, but to make a point. So if we look across the medieval world, it wasn't just Europe. India, Middle East, Russia, China, Japan, really sort of all had this medieval period with some kind of lords overseeing serfs or vassals of some sort, being ruled by monarchs, a very highly religious society. So this sort of diverse looking on the surface but deeply homogenous medieval world has kind of come back, because today, with pretty much no exception, the world has really gone through modernity. The world has pushed through the Industrial Revolution, and only maybe some of the last most stringent holdouts, like Saudi Arabia, really look like the world did before the Industrial Revolution. And so we can see there's a real big tie between industrial and economic development and so-called women's liberalization, because it would seem that there's a paradox between an industrial economy or post-industrial economy and the idea that the overwhelming majority of women do not work and they stay at home as moms, have large numbers of children who are supposed to help out with the family. It seems like these things are in direct contrast. So no matter what people try to get to about the morality of feminism and all this, that, and the other, it seems like it's really just a consequence in the shift of the way the economy works. And that's very important because we are on the doorstep of what they're writing as the big old Great Reset. I'm sure you've heard about that. It sounds delightfully scary, but it could actually be an opportunity for an interesting victory for women across the globe. Now, one of the sort of justifications of why women had to enter the workforce was World War II, right? There weren't enough men, and so women were asked to go to the factories and work as best they could and to help out with the war effort. And supposedly, the mythology goes that then women were very excited in the West, and they wanted to work, and they blew open the doors of these stereotypes, and things were changed forever. But I think it had to do a lot more with the fact that large corporations really at the time saw it, that half the workforce, in fact, slightly more than half the workforce, wasn't really working, and that they could get a lot more out of people and a lot more out of society. But now the Great Reset tells us that people aren't really needed, that jobs are going to vanish, and that everything is going to clamp down, and it's going to become a very brutally divided world between some sort of creative super class, and then people have to work with their hands doing things that robots can't do with their robotic hands. Now, that sort of begs the question is, okay, if we're going back to a world where we need less people, why can't we go back to a world with families? Why can't we go back to a world where being a stay-at-home mom to produce these highly educated, highly creative children is an option? Because as we see today, with the death of motherhood, we can see the effect on society. We can see the dumbing down of society. We can see the bad and misguided behavior of children. A quarter of the narcotics consumed all over the world are consumed in America and the West in general. We are miserable and defeated. Our families are shattered. And so in some ways, we look at this Great Reset as the sort of like a Terminator-style situation where the robots are coming to take our jobs and replace us. But it doesn't have to be. This could be the new opportunity where we really put the focus on the family, where mom stays home, she educates the kids, because the kids have to be as absolutely smart as they can to compete with the automation that they promise is coming. So in a lot of ways, we're at the dawn of maybe the return of the best of the old school world, where women were protected, taken care of, they were definitely pushed to have children, to have families and find the love of their life and all that, but at the same time have an extremely important, vital role in society, and maybe even work from home, because the technology that's allowing us to survive a certain disease has basically opened the doors for a lot of women to have motherhood, but with the opportunity for a little bit of work on the side, not having to choose between work and family, but kind of a mix of both. And so we're at the cusp of this very interesting opportunity. And definitely at the forefront of this new opportunity is Russia. So if we exclude the ultra-liberal freak show of downtown Moscow, overall, Russian society wants to have babies. The government wants people to have babies. The populace does. People want to have families. This is considered normal. It's also normal for men and women to say that they need each other, because they do. Russia's not so much an individualistic society, and individualism can be good. Individualism means you're not acting like an adult baby, on the one hand. But on the other hand, individualism can be very narcissistic, because we can't admit that we need other people. So that's one thing that's sort of good about the balance in Russian society. And with all the government programs that are trying to promote people to have families and have children, so with all the government programs that are out there to get people to have children and feel good about having families and stay together, and also having universal, fair, hard divorce laws, Russia's really ahead of the game in terms of where male and female relationships are going in the 21st century. So if anywhere is going to have a more happier, nicer, kinder, family-friendly Great Reset, it's going to be here in Russia. Because if we go back in time, we cannot forget that in the 1920s, during the Russian Revolution, there were all sorts of bizarre, freakish sort of movements coming up from the woodworks of transvestites wanting to parade on Red Square, and the Down with Shame movements, which were ultimately rejected by Russian society. Later on during World War II, unlike women in the West, when women were forced to participate in the man's world due to a very large percent of the male population being killed off, they found themselves in mines, ammunition factories, in the dirt and danger that men have to deal with at many jobs that women do not like. You know, it's become almost like an internet cliche that when women, usually feminists, talk about the desire to have, you know, equal numbers of men and women in the workplace, they're talking about scientists and doctors and these sort of white-collar, high-end professions. They're not talking about mine shafts, being an infantryman, or anything like that, you know what I mean? So we have to look back to World War II, and Russian women were shoved into this brutal masculine role of digging ditches and mines and all this other awful, dangerous work, and they did not like it. This was a different type of entering the male realm, and overall, Russian women rejected it. They do not want to pick up shovels and sling dirt all day. That's for us to do in the freezing cold, right? So that was another moment. Another moment that happened was, we cannot forget that Russian women experienced an apocalypse in the 1990s. The 90s, I cannot explain to you in words how horrible the 1990s were for Russian society. In fact, many people even believe that statistically the deaths caused by the collapse of the Soviet Union were equal to, if not worse, than the horrors of World War II. And women had to suffer through all of that. And you know what made that suffering a lot better? Being attached to a guy who could at least try as hard, given the absolute worst situation possible, to somehow provide for her and take care of her kids. That was just a little while ago, and it's very fresh in the minds of women. So that's probably some of the reasons why Russian society has a very different attitude towards feminism. The triumph for feminism found in the West in World War II was definitely not a triumph here, and the West has yet to, but just may in the near future, experience the horrors of the 1990s, where humans who were previously living in one of the great superpowers were forced to fight to scrap on the streets for survival. And when it comes to fighting for survival, it helps to have muscle mass. And so, the ball is really in Russia's hands to sort of show us what the family is going to look like. What are relations between men and women going to look like in the 21st century? Will Russia take that opportunity or just squander it? Well, we'll see. But what we can do is take a listen to Daria Platonova, who is a researcher of Orthodox feminism with a PhD from Moscow State University. She's going to tell us all about the true nature of feminism in Russia, starting right now. Ms. Platonova, so roughly speaking, let's start this off. What are some of these key differences between feminism in Russia and the West?
Yes, I've seen the huge differences because it depends on the context of where I have been in the West. There is a kind of process of secularization, and the religion is very, very moved far away from the state. So the problems of the feminism are not at all connected with any religious topics.
It's important to note that Russia does not practice separation of church and state, but symbiosis of church and state, where the entities remain separate but work together very often. That's an important nuance and one big difference between Russia and, say, America.
Well, in Russia, we have a very interesting phenomenon where the context, the Orthodox context, somehow influences the even the feminism. That means that all the topics which are broadly described in the Western feminism, the the war for equality, the war for rights, in Russia has the other degree, because Russia is more traditional, stays more traditional, and the influence of the Orthodox religion is much more complicated and interesting. So here we have a very interesting phenomenon in the Russian feminism, which appeared with the name of Tatiana Goricheva and is called the Christian feminism.
Tatiana Goricheva, at the age of 26, during the height of the Cold War and communism in Russia, converted to Eastern Orthodoxy. She later founded the idea of Orthodox feminism and had to survive as a dissident in the 80s in the West. When the opportunity to come home arose in the 1990s, she came right back and is here to this very day. But unfortunately, there is very little, if anything, written about her in English, as are all good things that come from Russia.
So I think it's unbelievable. It's very, very interesting to say about this, speak about this in the West, because nobody can understand how the religion, which according to the Western feminism is a way of installing the domination on women, can be connected, a religion can be connected with feminism. Like, it's two opposite sides and controversial concepts.
That's interesting, because in the West, it seems almost natural that femininity and Christianity are always at odds. But does this really have to be the case? Maybe they can actually work together and find some sort of middle ground.
Actually, Tatiana Goricheva herself notes that in Christianity there are no hierarchical type hierarchy of woman and man, and there is more dialogue between them. As she quotes Bible, and she says that there was the Virgin Mary, a really woman prototype, and there was the Christ, and there was no hierarchy between them. She gave born to him. Her son, and there were no inequality in this balance. There was a balance. There was two worlds: the world of woman and the world of man. Then Tatiana Goricheva would do the analysis, the biographies of saints and saints, and she finds that there were a lot of woman saints who had overcome a big, a huge root of great existential war, and that they are like really similar to the way which was taken and overcome by the men saints. So she says that there is a special role in the Christian Orthodoxy about the woman's stradania,
their suffering.
And she notes that that there can be not only one world like man's world and the woman as a reduction of this world, but there are two worlds.
And here's the key point. When Western society moved from monarchy to liberalism, who got their rights first? White, landowning men. They were the political actors, and everyone else was a non-actor, you know, kind of like how miners don't really have any responsibility today, or worse in the case of slavery. But as time went on, other types of men, other ethnicities, and non-landowning men were all sort of grouped into this male category as the big political actor in society. Now, the interesting thing that happened was when women also wanted to be reflected by, you know, the law, by constitution, rather than having sort of a separate entity, a separate nature for women, women were shoved into the male category. So the interesting thing is, when women did get their rights, they didn't get their rights by raising women from the status of non-entity to a separate woman entity of equal value to men, but they essentially became men. That is probably where feminism took a very wrong turn, and why there's so much desire among awful feminists today to essentially replace men, take the place of men, or just become men. So is this key oversight in the logic of... But then again, that was a long time ago, about 100 years ago. Maybe this key oversight in the concept of feminism really isn't relevant today. Or is it?
Well, Simone de Beauvoir says that a woman is another. Is another. She's an other, the figure of another.
Yeah.
And this another is created by a man's world. And now a woman has to do a revolution against this man world. Mm-hmm. It's Simone de Beauvoir, second way of feminism, so-called in history. Second mm-hmm. wave of feminism. But Tatiana Gorycheva notes that it is fantastic that the woman is an other. But she is not another created by a man. She is another created by the God.
Uh-huh.
And so here she points out that this other has a separate and other world,
mm-hmm.
and there is no possibility to do an hierarchical type of hierarchization between the men's and the women's,
mm-hmm.
and these worlds are different.
Yeah.
Here, Tatiana Gorycheva says that it can be based on the religion of Christianity, that when it comes to God, the man and the woman are equal,
mm-hmm.
but they are not equal, as the woman has all the rights the man has, or the man is not equal to woman and he doesn't have the similar rights that woman has.
Mm-hmm.
This has two worlds,
yeah.
and they doesn't correspond. They doesn't cross. They are two separate worlds.
Men and women being of equal value but completely different natures is, ironically, a pretty radical version of feminism for today's Western society.
This idea was existing not only in the Christian feminism, but it was also created and presented in the standpoint feminism, where there is also the declaration. It's not connected with religion. It is widely presented in the West. But here we have the main topic, that woman's world has nothing with man's world. This is a very paradoxical thing, because we think, yeah, the idea is quite obvious. Really, they are different, even from the consciousness, psychology, physical appearance were different. But the problem is that the liberal feminism and the feminism which dominates the West, it's focused on the creating the equality of women's and men's, even till the era of having the same psychological and physical appearance, like the androgyne figure. Is some kind of making the real equality of woman and man becoming true.
The current trend of androgyny, while forcing men to be sort of wishy-washy and passive, while praising women who are strong bosses, has really confused Western society. It's kind of like we're all square pegs being forced into round holes. Why should we do this? And why is this not happening in Russia, which is open to all the big, cool trends in Hollywood movies? Why does Russia have some sort of weird immunity to this?
Well, for us, that's a very interesting case, because when we watch how the feminism was developing in the world, we see that in Russia, the woman's suffrage was accepted in 1906.
From
the beginning of the 20th century.
Yeah.
While in France, we have it from 1944.
Uh-huh.
This is an incredible situation. That means that we have already lived in the feminist world, and now we go to the new strategy of this Christian feminism, Orthodox feminism.
Yeah.
And as for Russia of today, contemporary Russia, I think we're still trying to copy the West. We still try to be as liberal as the West is, even if we have a little bit the course in the geopolitics to the multipolarity. But still, we are in this world where there is the man's domination and the woman is some kind of other created by a man.
Yeah.
So I don't think that we have already overcome this liberal feminism in Russia. I just think we still are in a trap of that. We still exist in the liberal paradigm, which also, it is a liberal paradigm, but we don't we need to always understand that Russia was in the avant-garde of the feminist battle. Mm-hmm. And like today, we have a regress to this liberalism. So we had a very Soviet avant-garde cyborg, like cyber-driven feminism, the idea of real resistance of women against the bourgeois liberal landlord totalitarian hegemony. Yeah. And now we are somehow softening our discourse to the liberal model, which is a regress. And at the same time, on the same time, we have this Christian feminism which appears.
But so why did Russian women themselves, not under coercion, willfully choose to reject feminism?
Yeah, well, actually, I think that's because of the context. We are more classical, and maybe here a woman decided to be some kind of savers of the patriarchy. Maybe they started to feel that the men are losing a bit the will, and they decided to be the patriarchal, savers. Maybe this is the explanation. At the same time, the thing is that Russia was communist more in the geopolitical way, and I'm not sure that we can say that cultural, we had this cultural Marxism. So the West is now suffering from, not from the communism, as far as I'm analyzing the conservative media in the United States, I see a lot of anti-communist speeches, but these are not anti-communist, but more anti-cultural Marxism. So we had the communism, which was mainly the economical direction of the communist socialism, but this communist politics, we didn't have it a lot. We didn't have this focus on the feminism, on the rights of LGBTQ, and all what is happening now in the West. So our communism was really different.
Interesting. But then why does Russia, a formerly Marxist nation, seem to be immune to the effects of cultural Marxism?
So the thing is that our mentality didn't accept the communism as it was in the West, so we did a small re-editing of that. The thing is that for now, for Russians, it's quite interesting to see the cyborg feminist, which can exist in the communist parties, and they are for the destruction of the woman, while we doesn't see the communism as the destruction of the woman.
In closing, are there any key differences between the mentalities of today's Western and Russian women and their desires, hopes, dreams, and political views?
I do think we don't have this real obsession of fighting men, and I think that we like the dialogue between harmony between men and women. We think that when the guy is helping you, I don't know, in the street with handing something, I don't know, maybe a big suitcase, that is not a kind of their domination on us, that's a kind of help, and it is normal. That means that a person helps us in this way, and we help men the other way. I don't know, if it's a family, then we create the psychological balance, we help with our kitchen magic, you know, that there exists often, that it is a kind of magic.
Yeah.
You can find even the books now in the West where it's written the, you know, garden witch or kitchen witch. It's like even the witch is called the witch. So we're helping in all the series, and I think in Russia this idea of the dialogue between women and men is very, very widely accepted. Yes, yeah. While in the West the man and the woman dialogue, it causes a problem. So because the woman in the West has already the problem that they can be dominated by men, they will be dominated by men, and they have this small seam in their head, and they doesn't create a dialogue but a war.
Okay, I would like to thank Daria Platonova for giving us this fantastic interview from a definitely different perspective than I'm used to. So anyways, guys, in the future we're going to have Daria's interview in full. We're going to have an unedited version coming out very soon, which you should enjoy. enjoy. And I'd like to ask you to do the whole like, share, subscribe thing. But the key thing is really share. Guys, big tech is against us. The kind of things we're talking about in this program, they are not the kind of things big tech likes. So you're going to have to do it old school, manual. Share this program with your friends. I'd really appreciate it. And if you want to do an interview with me, I'm always happy to. Let's have a chit chat. Anyways, see you in the next episode.